Thank you. one more. So these Sapta Rishis, there's a story where I was recently presenting the movies in Jagannath Puri, maybe there's not there. So there are ISKCON temple, just behind, opposite Haridas Thakur Samadhi, the Vajra Mundir, is the place of the Sapta Rishis. There are some temples there. Unfortunately, I think there's only three temples left. The rest have been kind of, one has become a hotel and other things have been abandoned. But these are very famous places where the Sapta Rishis resided at one point. When King Induna came, he was going to take bath in the ocean. He saw the Sapta Rishis and he requested what service he could offer them. But they remained silent. They were deep in meditation. So later at night, Jagannath appeared in the dream to Induna and explained that these Sapta Rishis should be served by receiving the prasadam of Lord Jagannath. So devotees often go to these temples to see the deities that are being installed there. Some are Purnima temples. So it's very nice place. Angira Puri is a famous sage. We know the story of Dharma Muni and Angira Muni, who went to King Chittakedu. The king was lamenting, he had no heir, had no sons. So they blessed them, but unfortunately that son was very poisoned by the queen, they were jealous. And Kasyapa Muni also, first, he yelled, two of his wives, Diti and Aditi. Aditi, Vamanade, was manifesting from Kasyapa and Aditi. And Diti, Varsayani Gaspu, and Yeranyasha. So these are all very famous sages, personalities, and they were, the daughters were first class. And these personalities were first class, and all of them and others of the region were given the responsibility of propagating and creating the universe. And as we read, everything is here. The materialist scientists think that it just came by evolution, and there is no consciousness behind that. While the Vaishnava recognized that everything has consciousness, matter can only exist because there is consciousness. It's like the shadow. The shadow only exists because there's an object that it reflects. Otherwise, the shadow cannot exist. Or false diamonds, or false dollars, false money. There has to be real money and real diamonds for the false imitation to be created. So the material world we know is it can be artificial or an imitation of the spiritual world. But even for it to exist, there has to be living entities that exist here to make it alive or active. The Dalvis here, for me, the names of all the daughters and their descendants who filled all the three worlds. The 10 daughters given to Yamaraj were named Banu, our famous Banu Maharaj, Lamba, Katpud, Yami, Vishva, Sadhya, Varut Vati, Vasu, Vahulta, and Sankalpa. Now hear the names of their sons. O King, a son named Devarishana was born from the womb of Varu, and from him came a son named Indrasena. From the womb of Lamba came a son named Vidyota, who generated all the clouds. All the clouds. Since the clouds are also living entities. We know this word. Indra, when he, Krishna, advised Nanda Maharaj not to worship Indra, but to worship Govardhan, then Indra became very disturbed. And he sent all the clouds to come and dissipate Vrindavan. So all these clouds came on the request of Indra. So we see they're all personalities. Of course, the Western concept, this would be seen as mythology. Some fables or some tribal histories, nothing very to be taken very seriously. So myth, something about very powerful demons and gods and so forth. something to try to explain the history of our universe, our world. But of course, science will try to explain it through evolution, the Big Bang, which is completely foolish. One of the reasons the whole thing is foolish is there's no motivation. And for things to happen, there has to be desires, there has to be motivation. Just like Ology yesterday was presenting how Vrindavan was so, there was nothing here. 40 years ago when we used to come, it was just fields. The only thing we could stay here was a full ashram, which is quite a bit away. And everything else was pitch dark. Now there's hotels and everything. Why? Because people have desires. Because we have desire. We all come here. Why? Because we have desire. So desire creates things. Thinking, feeling, willing. So this is the basis of anything. There has to be desire. But there is no personality in the Big Bang theory. Therefore, there's no desire. Why would evolution take place? There's no desire, there's no ambition. Just like if you take someone who's handicapped or a child and you give them something, 1,000 rupees, he doesn't know what to do with it. There's no value, there's no desire there. There's no understanding. And therefore, you can easily trade that with another piece of colored paper and the child will give it away. But because you have awareness, if I give you 1,000 rupees, immediately they'll go in the pocket. You won't leave it hanging around because you know there's some value to this. So there has to be value, there has to be desires for something to take place. Just like we value Vrindavan to the Srila Prabhupada's mercy. He has given us the value of this Vrindavan. And therefore we've come from all corners of the world to come here. As Prabhupada would often say, I have not bribed them. These Western disciples. As Prabhupada was also pointing out, sometimes parents would come to Srila Prabhupada and try to convince Prabhupada to let their child come back to their day-to-day life prior to being devotees. Prabhupada said, I'm not holding them back. I'm a poor man. They have so much money, but still they're staying here. But Prabhupada was able to give us that value of Vrindavan. And because of that, we have developed the desire to come here. So, similarly here, there is a desire for procreation, and therefore all forms of living entities will be manifest as we read on. From the womb of Kapu came the son named Sankata, whose son was named Tikata. From Tikata came the demigods named Durga. From Yami came the son named Swarga, whose son was named Nandi. The sons of Vishva were the Vishva Devas. Krishna talks about the Vishva Devas in the Bhagavad Gita. They're a section of demigods. There are millions of demigods who rule everything, including the blinking of our eyes. So different sections of demigods rule different areas. When Rukmini, from the womb of Satya, came the Satyas, who had a son named Artha Siddhi. The two sons who took birth from the womb of Bharupati were Bharupan and Jayanta. Jayanta, who was an expansion of Lord Vasudev, is known as Upendra. So Upendra is also known as Bhavanadev. We know the story of Bhavanadev. Bhavani Maharaj was a big king, and he had conquered the world. So Krishna disguised himself, came as a dwarf, Bhavanadev, and although his guru, Suprajarya, told him not to surrender, not to give anything, Bhavanaraj was very charitable, so he would not refuse the request of Bhavanaraj. And now Bhavanaraj was saying, Bhavanadev, so Bhavanaraj refused the request of Bhavanadev, and Bhavanadev, of course, made two steps, got three steps of land. Of course, at first, Bali was kind of laughing, but I own the whole universe. Why do you want only three steps? You should ask more. I can give you a whole planet. But he didn't know that the Lord is inconceivable. So, first step, he crossed out the universe. The other step, he pierced the universe. And then he told Bali, where should I put my third step? So, Bali's daughter, when she first saw Bhavanadev, she fell in love with him. He was so beautiful. such a beautiful personality and understand the Supreme Krishna himself, Supreme Personality of Godhead had come. So she had motherly affection, and she was thinking, if I have a child, I would love to have a child with him. But what she saw later, Vamanadeva tricking her father and arresting him, she felt, I would like to kill this person. So when Krishna manifested his pastime, she appeared as Putana. And in that pastime, she had that position where she came as a mother, but to poison Krishna, to kill Krishna. So she smeared poison on her breast and offered her breast to Krishna. And Krishna saw her and his mother because she had offered her breast. And she didn't get the Sahujya, the virgin, the most demons, they merge in Krishna's body. But she actually got the position of the mother of Krishna. So, we'll pass that here about Vamanadeva Upendra. The demigods named the Mahurtikas took birth from the womb of Mahurta. These demigods delivered the results of actions to the living entities of their respective times. So the Mahurtikas are also the assistants of Yamaraj, or the Yamadutas. And we know the story of Arjuna. Arjuna was about to be banished by the Yamadutas, but the incarnation of the name of his dumb son, Narayan. Then finally, Vishnu Dutas came and there was some debate. Finally, the Yamadutas had surrendered to the Vishnu Dutas. So, there are different agents that are there looking after everything. This pure world is not vacant. It's full of living, and full of different personalities, living gods who are in charge. The son of Sankalpa was known as Sankalpa, and from him lust was born. The sons of Vasu were known as the eight Vasus. Just here, their names for me, Drona, Prana, Dhruva, Arka, Avni, Dosha, Vastu, and Vibhavastu. From Abhimati, the wife of the Vastu named Drona, were generated the sons named Arsha, Shoka, Vaya, and so on. So we know the story of the eight Vastus. They were cursed by Vishvamitra, Vishishta, I should say. they came to the heritage of Vishishta, Muni, and one of the Vasu's wife saw this beautiful Nandini cow. And she wanted that cow. So somehow they tricked Vasishtha Muni and stole that cow. So Vasishtha Muni, by the mystic power, but it was there when it came to place, so he cursed them to all take birth to the material world. And of course, the one who was the main instigator became Bhishma. So, Gaukara, Santanu, he had accepted to marry, Gaukara actually accepted to marry Santanu on the condition that he would oppose her in anything she did. So, every time they had a child, she drowned them. And he tolerated them. But at the eighth birth, that he could not tolerate anymore, so he stopped her, and that was Devavrata, who later became Bhishma after taking a vow. Such a powerful vow to remain a brahmachari, although he was a powerful kshatriya. So it was kind of unheard of. So, Guru Jadvasti, the wife of Prana, gave birth to three sons named Saha, Ayu, and Purojava. The wife of Yuga was known as Dharani, and from her throne room, various cities took birth. From the womb of Vasana, the wife of Arka, came many sons, headed by Parsha. Dara, the wife of the Vasu named Agni, gave birth to many sons, headed by Raghinaka. From Kritika, another wife of Agni, came a son named Skanda. Kartikeya, whose sons were headed by Vishaka. From the womb of Sarvani, the wife of the Vasu named Dosha, came a son named Shushumara, who was an expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Shushumara is considered to be Dhruva Loka, above the seventh planetary system. We know Dhruva Maharaj, he was sitting or on the lap of his father, Kuntala Maharaj, and his mother was not the favorite of the two. So his favorite wife told Dhruva that you cannot stay here, you're not favored. So anyway, Dhruva was upset. He went and performed a lot of meditation, and finally he wanted a kingdom better, greater than what Brahma's. So he got this Dhruva Loka, which he could rule, and it was for 35,000 years. So this is Sishumara, the expansion. It's a spiritual planet in the material world. It is not destroyed at the time of the annihilation. From Amgi Rishi, the wife of the Vasu named Vasu, was born the great architect, Vishvakarma. Vishvakarma became the husband of Akriti, from whom the Manu named Chakshusha was born. The sons of Manu were known as the Vishvadevas and Satyas. So Chakshusha Manu was the sixth Manu, and Vishvakarma we know is the architect of the demigods. So Vishvakarma, of course, is the architect of all the demigods. He builds all their kingdoms and gurus and so forth. He also builds a lot of their weapons. And he also built Sri Lanka, Ravana's kingdom, Palace of Gold. When Parvati and Shiva were to be married, Parvati was very much worried that, because we know Shiva doesn't live in a very, very great place, because he lives in a very austere environment. So she didn't want to have a wedding in such an environment. So she requested Shiva to please make some kind of arrangement so we can have a very festive, very beautiful wedding. So Shiva requested Vishvakarma to build a big kingdom, which became Sri Lanka, the Palace of Gold. But Ravana, after the whole ceremony, Ravana was a great worshipper of Lord Shiva. So he pleaded for Shiva, and Lord Shiva was obliged to hand the kingdom to him. Also, Vishvakarma built Dwarka, he also built Hastinapur, the different kingdoms that Vishvakarma built. And the architects and so forth here in India, they often worship Vishvakarma. They see him as the inspiration beyond their work. Usha, the wife of Pibhavasu, gave birth to three sons, Yuta, Ruchisa, and Atapa. From Atapa came Panchayama, the span of day, who awakens all the entities to ritual activities. So this is interesting how in the wake of day, at night we know night is the mode of ignorance. But day is the mode of passion, where everything starts happening. We see this in Vrindavan, at night things get a little quiet. But as soon as day breaks, you start hearing the horns and everything starts going. So day is an impetus, as it describes here. Awakens all living entities to mature activity. Everyone wants to be active because we're in need. We're not atma, we're not self-satisfied, but we're full of desires. And we attempt by our activities to try to fulfill all these different desires. And therefore, daytime is the day, is the time when that is feasible, the mode of passion is there. And people are forced, impelled, like Arjuna is requesting Krishna, why is it people impelled to act? And Krishna says it is left only. And he explains to Arjuna that one should try to curb this lust, because it becomes an enemy. It's like a fire, it can burn anything. So he tells Arjuna to curb this lust by the sword of knowledge. If one has knowledge, then he can see things properly. Unfortunately, people don't want to see things properly. They want to enjoy this virtual world. It's just like if you go to the movie with a friend, and your friend has seen the movie. And as the movie is being played, he starts describing the movie to you. So what are you going to tell your friend? Yeah, quiet. You're killing it. I can't enjoy the movie. You're telling all the punchers, describing all the what's going to happen. So most people don't want the description of life. They think that it's going to be a joyride in the world. That everything, and that's what we hope. We say, everybody, have a nice day. We hope everyone will have a nice day. But actually, that is not the case. Krishna says, padam padam yadi padam na desha, that there will be misery. And that is a blessing. Why? How can misery be a blessing? Because it indicates to us that there's some problem. Just like when you have pain in your body, it is a good thing. Because you know, okay, I have a disease. If I have pain in my knee, then there's something wrong with my knee. Because I should be feeling pain. So then I'll go to see a doctor. But if I never felt any pain, then I would just go on and drop dead. Because I didn't feel it. Sometimes people have cancer, and they don't feel it. So they never go to the doctor. Because by the time they go, it's too late. So the pain we experience in the material world is actually a blessing to Krishna, if you can perceive it like that. Because it indicates that something is wrong. Something, I'm doing something wrong. And we all came to Krishna consciousness because somehow we had pain. We weren't enjoying this material world. Although Prabhupada said the reason you came to Krishna is you were so lusty that they could satisfy you. But this is the reason we feel pain in the material world. And because of that pain, if one is intelligent, he'll inquire. Why is this pain coming? Now, of course, the materialists, they think they will solve the pain by material solution. If you have a lot of money, you can solve the pain because you can buy your problems away. And now they're doing so much research that in New York, and this is a true story, this is a true fact, that now there's a team of researchers because they're trying to find out the aspects of the brain. They're doing a lot of research for artificial limbs. This is one of the reasons that people who lose limbs, they try to make artificial limbs. And these limbs, they can connect them to the nervous system so that you can move just by willing. Now they're putting sensors in some areas of the head and you can feel something. So they know there's sections of the brain where feeling or taste and so forth. So they're researching the place where people get depressed. Because depression in the West is a big thing. Millions of people take pills for depression. And difficulty to sleep at night, and you know, all these things. So they're trying to find that spot, and they'll put a chip there. An electronic chip. So then when you feel depressed, when you feel not happy, you just press a button, you'll feel very happy. Of course, it'll cost you some money. It'll cost you some money, but you know, if you can afford it, you can have eternal bliss. So this is their foolishness, but they're convinced. And Krishna, Maya, everybody together, Krishna's convincing them, yes, go do these foolish things. Because they don't have real knowledge of the spirit soul. They don't acknowledge the nature of the soul. And therefore, they take everything, emotion, it's just functions of the brain. And when the brain stops, that's their definition of death. It's not when the soul leaves the body, but when the brain, there's no brain impulse. That means the person is dead. So they think everything is coming from the brain. So now we're at the verse 17 and verse 18. So we'll check the verse 18. Ajatapad Hadebrahdo Ajayakapad Hadebrahdo Aurupo Mahariti Rudasya Pashadastanye Gora Preta Vidayaka
presentation, in its pure presentation. Now, at the same time,
philosophically, we can understand that the Acharyas all wrote commentaries on the Bhagavatam. Now, these Acharyas were not there to waste their time. It's just on some mythology, some insignificant texts or verses of the Bhagavatam. Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, so many great Acharyas have written commentaries. And their life was dedicated to these scriptures. So based on that, we have assurance that what is being presented here is authentic. And Srila Prabhupada also wasn't wasting his time. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he wasn't wasting his time in Bhakti Yoga. They all wrote commentaries on these very verses and these the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we can rest assured that although in one sense, one aspect, these particular verses don't have so much significance for us Vaishnavas. They're important, of course. They help us understand the vastness of this universe. They help us understand the greatness of Krishna. And in that sense, they open our ability to have awe and reverence towards Krishna, which is prerequisite for other things to develop. The living entity in the material world, due to ahamkara, false ego, is so proud that he's even prepared to deny the existence of God. So this is very serious. It's just like if you steal someone's car, it's bad. But if you steal a police officer's car, it's a lot worse. So not only are we trying to be Krishna ourselves, we're even denying the fact that there is even God. And of course, as earlier mentioned, the scientists and so forth, the atheists, they have all their jargon and their philosophy, their speculative ideas, their thesis and all that. And they deny the existence of Krishna. But when it comes time to give themselves honor, they have all these Oscars. Nobel Prize, and you know, the Oscars for the movies, and the Grammys for this, and then they recognize some kind of personality. But if we really are faithful to their theory, everything is just an illusion. So why should at one point anyone take any credit? You have no credit because it's just evolution. You haven't done anything. You're just part of that evolution. So right there is a complete contradiction, hypocrisy. At the same time, we see how they're so concerned about the environment. Pollution. In France, they were all applying recently, you know, all the environmentalists, they all came, all the leaders, and they're going to do big committees and big things and reduce the pollution and the ozone depletion. But that's part of evolution. Right? Human beings, we're part of evolution. So pollution is part of evolution. Right? So if a human species gets wiped out, according to their theory, another species will just evolve. So why are you worried? Worry about it. But now all of a sudden it doesn't work. The maths doesn't work. You see, 2 plus 2 doesn't equal 4 anymore. Once they feel threatened, then they're not prepared to go ahead with their philosophy. Let the pollution come. It's just everything's just part of evolution. But why are you interfering? There has been so many chaotic situations in the universe. Life has gone on. So, even if there's an atomic bomb that dropped, life will go on. So why are you worried? So we see, it's just hypocrisy. They're not even faithful to their own beliefs. But Krishna consciousness, as I mentioned, is not simply a question of jnana. We have the story of Narada Muni, who was going to see Narayana and Vaikuntha, and was stopped by the Brahmin, who requested, "Oh, Narayana, Narada, you're going to see Lord Narayana, so please ask, when will I get liberation?" And later he saw some shoemakers, and the shoemaker was also asking, "You're going to see Lord Narayana, please ask, when will I get liberation?" So Narada goes to see Lord Narayana, and finally, later as he The discussion goes on. Narada mentions, oh, there's these two fellows. They're inquiring about their future. What will be their future? When will they get liberated? So when the lion says, well, tell this Brahmin that we'll take billions of love. And the shoemaker, this life will be liberated. So Narada really was somewhat puzzled. How is this Brahmin will take so long? And this simple shoemaker will take this one life. He said, what happens if they doubt? Maybe don't doubt that I'm making up a story. They come to see me. He said, calm down. I was occupied. I was putting an elephant through the eye of a needle. So he goes back, and the Brahmin is very anxious to see Narada. And he asks him, what did Gorgarayan say? Bad news. It's not going to happen. So he said, yeah, well, how do I know you were really there? So, well, I can tell you what Narayan was doing. He was passing an elephant through the eye of a needle. He said, oh, this is all nonsense, you see. I don't believe all this stuff, all these stories. So this Brahmin, although he was chanting mantras and all that, deep down, he didn't really have any faith. But when he saw the cobbler, the shoemaker, then Narayan said, you're very fortunate. Narayan said, only in this life, in this very life, you will be. He said, oh, what was my Lord doing? He was anxious to hear. So I said, oh, my Lord was passing the elephant through the eye of the needle. And the cobbler started dancing, and he was so happy. So Narada was puzzled, what is this? The Brahmin bowing and this simple shoemaker, he's in half so happy. So he said, you believe this? You believe this story? He said, yes. Well, how is it possible? How do you believe it? He said, well, I see from a small abandoned seed, a huge tree is being produced. So if from such a very small seed, a huge tree can come, then from a big thing, a small, he can enter a small thing, in the eye of an eagle. Krishna can do anything. So in this way, he understood that this person, although externally was doing simple work, he was a Vaishnava in his heart. And the Brahmin, he was smart, the Brahmin. He was just following some rituals, but didn't have any devotion. So this is what is required. The whole process of Krishna consciousness is the process to awaken that devotion to Krishna. Everything we do, chanting japa, following principles, all these different things, coming to Vrindavan, preaching, distributing books, anything we do, ultimately culminates in that aspect. Are we actually developing love for Krishna? The Prabhupada said this Krishna consciousness and it's so simple, you might miss it. We may get caught up in so many big things, big positions, big this, big that, but have nothing to do with that. It's simply the act of loving Krishna. And that is not an easy thing, it's very difficult. Sometimes even as parents, it's difficult to express our love towards our children. We want to, but there's a visitation, the false ego, the whole God. Sometimes we meet people, we'd like to share our feelings, but we're hesitant. But Prabhupada was never hesitant. And he always knew, he was always at the right place at the right time, you could say. Everything became perfect when Srila Prabhupada was there. And he knew exactly how to act with anybody. One time this man, Prabhupada was in New Vrindavan, and this man came, and he had brought some fruits and vegetables from his garden. And the man came, and of course, Prabhupada was giving darshan, and it was a big crowd of devotees. And the man was feeling a little bit awkward, not knowing exactly how this would be perceived. And Prabhupada had a new smile, and he told the man, this is real love. When you grow something from your garden, and you give it to someone, that is real love. And the man was so much happy. Yeah. But Prabhupada was genuine. It wasn't something, he had been Dale Carnegie's book, you know. It wasn't something like that. You know, Dale Carnegie's book, how to influence others and so forth. Like a merchant, you go to see somebody, Hare Krishna, he's very happy, you know, but he's just anticipating that I'll get this person to buy something. The problem wasn't like that. He had genuine concern and love for everyone. And therefore, he was not dead. He could move. He could move everyone. Because people could see and feel that genuine love. So that is what is required. That is what this Krishna consciousness is all about, somehow to awaken that emotional feeling. And in that aspect, there is, in our Sadhana Bhakti, there is Vaidhi and Raghunuga. So Vaidhi is, you could say, the intellectual side, and Raghunuga is the emotional side. Just like the brain, we have an emotional side of the brain and the intellectual side of the brain. When we come to Krishna consciousness, we at first want to utilize a lot of that intellectual side. We ask questions, why do you wear tilak, why do you shake your head, what is this, why is Krishna doing, so forth and so on, all these different questions that are there to establish first. Just like love. When you fall in love, sometimes people fall in, they call it blind love. But sometimes you get cheated, because you find out later, if I would have known, I would not have married this person. It was too emotional. That's why we say sometimes women are less intelligent, because they have that stronger emotional side rather than the rational side. Men are more on the rational side, and the women are more on the emotional side. So when there's too much emotion, one can be cheated. Didn't ask the right question, not grounded. So Krishna consciousness, at first we want to ground ourselves with Vaidhi Bhakti, rules and regulation, understanding things properly. But that is not enough. That may be good at first, but then there has to be the emotional side that develops, Raghunuga. And therefore Prabhupada also said that in one sense women are more fortunate because it's much easier for them to serve. Men are more standoff, kind of, you know, what is this, what it's all about? A little bit more reserved. Women have a natural tendency to serve. And if they find the right person to serve, then it's very perfect, very good. So this emotional side is a side that we also want to develop, is Raghunuga life. Of course, it cannot be cheaply acquired, cheaply brought. It has to be solid. Otherwise, it becomes sahaja. Emotional, that cannot be sustained by the real principles of Krishna consciousness. So both aspects are there, but both require the aspect of love. So this whole process of Krishna consciousness is meant to develop that, by the chanting, by the reading, everything we do. And of course in Vrindavan, it is the most wonderful place because all these loving pastimes have taken place. But as we read here in the Bhagavatam, other aspects are being described. And all these things, all these understandings are meant to create a very roundabout, harmonized, natural understanding that will bring us step by step to the ultimate goal, which is pure love of Krishna. But if we jump ahead, then it will not properly develop. Then things will be sentimental, too artificial. So I think the class stops this way. I'll stop here. I hope some have questions. Yes, Mark.
I have a question, just a comment.
Yes.
You were talking about the intellectual side, the emotional side, and sometimes we overthink. So I was a guest at the temple. I'd been reading Gita, and I was thinking Krishna's blue because it's the color of the sky and the cosmos and something. I had this idea. So I asked Prabhupada, why is Krishna blue? And Prabhupada said, because it is so gorgeous.
That was it.
Yeah, sure, Robert has been doing it. It's very simple. Yes.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a very enlightening class. I have a question about the series of verses that we're on, and I don't really expect a specific answer, so I guess maybe it's more of a comment. But First, there were 10,000 Sundays for Dalcha. And Narayana Muni, of course, incited them to want to take to the path of liberation. And there were 1,000 sons after that. And they were supposed to be populating the universe, but then again, they also took the path of liberation. And so then Dalcha became very upset and cursed Narayana Muni. And then he impregnated his wife, and he got 60 daughters from that one wife. And we're reading these series of verses how all of the entities, basically the whole universe, were propagated by those 60 daughters. So I'm just wondering, like, I understand he's upset because his sons didn't do what he asked them to do, but he did the whole universe with just 60 daughters.
Actually, the materialists, they tried to trace out the origin, and they traced it out to Africa, that everything started in Africa, by the genes, you know, they knew about the genes and all that stuff. I mean, from our human perspective, they said 10,000 sons and so forth, even, you know, 60 daughters, it's inconceivable, and how all these different, living entities, clouds and cities and snakes and all these things, birds came about, and so it is kind of mind-blowing or inconceivable. And this is, I suspect, one of the reasons that the Acharyas, most of these verses don't really have any purport. This is why I was mentioning that it is in the Bhagavatam, and has some importance. But it's a little bit like the brick of the temple. You know, there's so many bricks in the temple. In themselves, they're not that important, but because they create the atmosphere of the temple, they are important. But in the secondary, like the background, kind of. So, certainly all these different descriptions and all these different aspects are details that are there. It's sort of like the fifth canto, so there's a lot of aspects, you know, the planets and how to reconcile and how to understand. You know, it's very difficult to try to figure it all out. So, but the conclusion is we can understand somehow the universe was populated. And there was a need for it to take place. And based on all these, the desires of the living entities, each one sees a particular body. And some are, like in the Gita, it says they're good species and they're bad species. You know, there are all sorts of species that are there. Sometimes people wonder, well, how is it that if God is all good, how can something bad come from God if God is all good? The Prabhupada described it as the backside. Just like when you eat fast food, or just because you fast food doesn't mean you're bad. You're a bad person because you fast food. No. So, yeah, that's another thing. But, so the material world is like that. It's like the negative aspect is there, but because it's there, it doesn't mean Krishna is bad. And everything Krishna does is good. But because we have a desire that is bad, I think Krishna accommodates us. Because Krishna is the servant of everyone, ultimately. Krishna's pleasure lies in serving his devotees. And even though we, if God and ourselves, can be devotees of Krishna, Krishna is not the God of us to be his devotees. And therefore, he fulfills our desires. Not that he wants to, that's not his choice. If we were to ask Krishna's opinion, he wouldn't say, come to the material world, do this, and he'd say, come to the spiritual world. Why do you want to be here and suffer? But because we insist, we want to, then Krishna said, okay, he sanctions it. Go ahead, do your best, try to enjoy it, and when you get tired of it, then you can always come back. I'll always be here. So, with that, but maybe you have
a deeper or
actually, I have a simple question. First, thank you for my class. We've often heard this story that Uchinaga is reading. reincarnated, specifically when I reincarnated. I'm just wondering if you know where Srila Prabhupada or his predecessors have actually stated that.
The source that I've got was from the Padamananda. It is Hindu magazine that he does. But it's actually, I've never read it from Srila Prabhupada directly, and I don't know the exact source, but that is described. Is it in some of the, you know, the Puranas or some of the Vedas?
I don't know. I was asking where it is stated that Pushyananda actually is sister Lali Maharaj reincarnated. It's a very common story that
I've
never heard from Prabhupada.
Well, if you go to Google, you can check out some of the demons on the Abhidhamma curse, how they became different demons and so forth. Prabhupada doesn't describe a lot of these different things, but I don't know the exact source.
I just want to add a comment on that. It was from the it's a series of the Ramananda Saga, the pastimes of Krishna. That's where the pastime is from. But I also agree with Kundalatana. I never read anywhere. But in any case, beside the point, I just have a question. Daksha is actually being portrayed, you know, like not demonized, but a materialistic bad person. But he was actually following the order of a Mahajan, Lord Rama. Now, of course, you know that one of the Mahajans, Narada and Lord Brahma, they're both, but one of them is into renunciation, the other one is into creation, procreation. It's like the King Priyavrata, he was able to fulfill the order of both of them, of Narada Muni and Lord Brahma. Internally, externally, he accepted the order of Lord Brahma to appropriate, and yet he got married. But internally, he cultivated this renunciation. He was fulfilling the order of Narada Muni. So, why, Daksha is such a bad person by following the legacy of his grandfather.
So your question is, why did Narada interfere with that whole process?
No, I'm not trying to criticize.
No, we're trying to understand.
Because both is important, because if it was not for Daksha, we wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
Like you said, $60, they're the catalyst principle in terms of giving birth to the nature and living entities. But at the same time, I can understand that the ultimate goal of life is to, renounce everything, like Narada Muni was preaching. Do you have any further impact on that?
Well, we know Srila Prabhupada would often say, man is good, woman is good, together is bad. And he said that all men should remain brahmachari and all women should get married. And they told Prabhupada that's impossible. So yeah, that is meditative. It's an impossible situation. So the reality is, yes, living entities need to come to the natural world, but do they really need to come? So the question is that there are some benefits for the living entity to come into the natural world, because that is the desire, but that's not the ultimate goal. So just to take birth in the material world is not a success. Success is when you take that human form and you get the second birth, the diksha, from the spiritual master, who's going to guide you and the spiritual understanding. That is the real perfection of life. And it describes how one should not become a father, one should not become a mother, a teacher, a spouse, if you cannot deliver his dependence on the offspring. So it's not just the fact that you're a parent, and you can be a good parent, where you're providing education, like in the West, you know, there's good education, university, you know, housing, cars, and everything's great, I mean, but there's no spirituality. So at the end, it's a complete waste of time. So the real thing, like we used to do that play, the bird in the cage, you know, the one's decorating the cage, and he's got the mirrors and everything, but the bird's not being fed, there's no food, so the bird ultimately dies. So if that's all we're doing, is just polishing the cage and forgetting to feed the bird, then it's a complete waste of time. So grihastha life in itself is not a success. It becomes a success if we become Krishna conscious, and if we can inspire our children to be Krishna conscious, then it is a success. Otherwise, it's a sex life. You know, it's just entanglement. The problem I remember in 75 when we were in Atlanta around Brahmacharya, there, the Prabhupada told us, if you remain Brahmachari and the student books, 80% of your chance of going back to Godhead. And if you get married, 25%. They said, avoid all headaches, don't get married. So, all the Prabhupada performed the marriages themselves, you know, initially in Bunyana. But at the same time, there was a warning. And that's why there's marriage. There's a license to these things, just like alcohol. You have to have a license. Driving is a license because it's bad. Men and women together is bad. But there's a license, there's an acceptance there if it's done properly. But otherwise, it can be very chaotic. And even in Krishna Gospel, we see there's so many divorces. So it's not the oasis that people are expecting it to be. It's a very serious commitment at the same time. So, both aspects are there. So thank you very much. Can I take one more question?
I just make a comment that personality is like Daksha. They are like every other living entity. They have two sides. Another example would be Devarsha Muni. He can very easily be enraged, or he could be very easily pleased. And according to his demeanor at that time, he rewarded or he cursed the individuals according to that emotion that they were experiencing.
Shri Prabhupada ki jai.